My name is Jason Kirk, and I'm the host of Street Roots Poetry Showcase. And today I'm going to be being interviewed by my engineer and producer and editor, Samya.
Hey, Jason.
Samya Singh, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Awesome. So I thought it would be fun for us to learn more about you and have you read some of your poetry on, what do we call this show again?
I guess the Street Roots Poetry Showcase now, because I'm trying to showcase other talents.
Awesome. Okay, so you're definitely one of the poetry talents in the city. And something I wanted to know about was, how did you get involved with Street Roots?
When I got to Portland, one of the first people that I met, like quite a few people, they're like, go to Street Roots, you can get a free cup of coffee and socks and stuff.
Okay.
And then you can go out on the street and pen papers, and then you can...
And where did you move from?
I moved from Brigham City, Utah.
Okay.
It's on the Wasatch Front. I'm from just over the mountain. It's kind of desert in Brigham City, but in Logan, it's kind of like in Oregon, where it's like green and lush, and they care about recycling and stuff.
And when you moved here, were you homeless right away?
Yeah, I had been kind of couch surfing at friends for a while before I left Utah for 5 or 6 months. And then that wasn't working out, and so I decided to move to Portland. I had a friend that was from here, and she visited up here every so often. So I'm like, Portland sounds like a great place to try and start over.
Okay, so you came here to start over, and then you got someone associated you with Street Roots. And then from there, how long did you work there? Were you a vendor?
Yeah, I was a vendor. My location was Pioneer Square.
Gotcha.
At the Nordstrom's.
And then how long did you work there for?
For like 5 or 6 months.
Okay. And so from what I understand, the vendors also help write in the paper.
Yes.
And like, what are the kinds of things that the writers, or the vendors contribute?
Well, they contribute to the poetry section, which is kind of in between the articles, but they also inform the staff. And so it's kind of a empowerment thing, because they see people on the streets and they're having a rough time every day.
Yeah.
So, and that's what the paper is centered around, is giving people an economic opportunity, because it's not like you're getting something for nothing. It's, you're a member of the press, you're out, you buy a paper for a quarter and you sell it for a dollar.
Okay, so the vendors are learning about...
And it's like a microeconomics.
Yeah, yeah. So they're learning about money management, how to turn a profit.
Yeah, be your own businessman on some level, because you've got to meet expenses. You've got to buy more papers. You've got to meet your daily stuff that you take care of.
And if you don't sell all your papers, what happens?
You can turn old ones in 2 copies for 1 copy.
Okay, cool. It seems like an amazing community, Street Roots, for both the staff and the vendors.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's a lot of creative people who come to be part of Street Roots. And so I know that there were creative writing workshops. So were you part of those workshops?
Yeah. Angelique, the creative writing lady for Street Roots, started attending the creative writing classes, and then I just started writing a lot, especially right before I got housing, I've been in housing for 18 months now.
Oh, awesome.
So, yeah.
So would you be willing to read something that you wrote for Street Roots?
Light in the window. The whole world waiting just around every corner. Strange days in strange places, taking wings and taking flight. Once the sun goes down, the lights turn on. Light another fire so I can get home. After I land, seeing that light in the window cheers me up. Someday I will never have to go away.
Thank you so much for that. Sounds like you're getting emotional. So what are you feeling right now?
A sense of finally having a place. That I'm not going to get told tomorrow or in the next hour that I have to get moved along.
So something of your own, a place that you can go to.
Yeah.
That's just your place.
Yeah. And at this point, I am in a community garden. And so I've got a 200 square foot plot. And so now I have yet another place that I can call my own on top of that apartment that I have.
And so I think one of the things that's really wonderful about this show is that the listeners are actually going to learn about what it's like to be homeless from somebody who has been homeless. And so for you, what were some of the hardest things about being homeless that maybe the general person, I think you referred to it as, how did you refer to people who have homes?
Oh,
like house people?
Oh yeah, like on some level as a houseless person, if you go into like other places, they look at you like a dog that's going to piss on their carpet. And so you have to be extra people pleasing or whatnot. No, I'm not going to pee on your carpet. That only happens over time. So it's like out the gate, you're black, white, brown, red, it doesn't really matter. You're still on some level being treated like a dog instead of a person.
Like you're seen as less than because you don't have a place,
yeah,
a home or a house.
Yeah, and you're constantly on.
Yeah.
So you're constantly on edge.
Your nerves are shot.
Yeah.
And so for someone like me, who I've always lived in a home, I've always had a place to live, what is something that you really want me to know about that experience?
Can you say that again? I have a little bit of attention deficit sometimes.
So what's the one, let's say there was one takeaway that you wanted someone to take to learn or understand about the houseless population, what is it that you really want people to,
like,
know?
People are surprised that, like, say the poetry and the creative writing, that anybody on that's a street person could have, but there's doctors, lawyers, people that have gone out and been wealthy business people. And they're the guy digging in for the garbage can for 10 cent aluminum recyclable or whatever.
So you're saying, like, it's anybody could be houseless or homeless. And also, which term do you prefer? Or is...
When I was a member of Hazelnut Grove and outgrowth of the Village Coalition that I'm a part of, seems like houseless is just like a new, because on some level Portland was my home. I just didn't have a place to call my own or a house. like, wherever I lay my head is my home. On some level, it totally applies when you're out on the streets, because that's all you got.
Mm-hmm. So do you have a preference of the term? Or
not really. Like, I almost feel like a token houseless person at this point.
Yeah, tell me more about that.
I've done, like, master ceremonies work. I've done speakers bureau work with Village Coalition. And so I've even been somewhat of a textile artist.
Mm-hmm.
And so when was that? Yes, I was Instagram famous, but I was the homeless artist.
Mm. Instead of just the artist.
I was the, when I got into speaking, I was the homeless artist who now speaks through the lens of mental illness.
Okay.
And so having to have my status brought out as a,
like, making you legitimate. So instead of, like, Jason Kirk,
yeah,
it's Jason Kirk who was homeless. Jason yeah. Kirk had this
it's
mental
still
illness.
Like a stigma that's, I don't know how long it's going to follow me for. Like, I'm trying to let it go, but on some level, through this and other things, I'm a public person now.
Yeah. I guess, what is it that bothers you about having that attached to your name?
It doesn't really bother me because I've won the struggle.
But there's,
like, the struggle is over for me, so now through some of the nonprofit work that mm-hmm. I do, I'm trying to maybe lessen the impact of what I see out on the streets. Because the shelter model, on some level, is having difficulties because nobody really wants to stay in one. Like,
sure. So they're, so shelters are not hospitable places for people.
Yeah, people need to spread out and have a little sense of space. That's why I'm a proponent of the village model.
Mm-hmm. And the shelter model, I don't know if the shelter model was ever meant as a permanent place. Or if it was meant as
it's supposed to be transitional, but there's really nothing at the end of the road. Like, say for myself, I went to Union Gospel Mission. I was going to totally do their program, but because I take mental health meds, I don't qualify.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. What, do you know the reason why they make that stipulation?
Because they don't want crazy people in their program.
But, I mean, just because, like, you have
on
a
some
mental
level,
illness.
I'm mentally ill, and so they want, if I was just a straight up addict
mm-hmm.
or alcoholic, mm-hmm. then yes. But because I have that, plus I'm taking psychological meds,
mm-hmm.
then I don't qualify.
That's interesting because from what I understand, addiction is tied, can be tied to mental illness. It's not just by, you know, it's
yeah.
a unique thing by itself. They're all, everything's kind of tied together. Like having a psychological issue, not having a home, having substance
like,
abuse issues.
I have my housing now through Cascadia Behavioral Health.
Okay.
And in order to qualify for that program, I had to be homeless for 2 years.
Wow.
And then by that point, it's proven that I have mental issues or whatnot. So
does that feel unfair to you?
No, like I feel blessed.
Like deep?
Like I've taken the opportunity of having housing and gone out and done stuff out in the real world, like making the show.
Totally, yeah. No, I feel like you've taken the opportunities that you've had and have turned them into creative things, creative products.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking for your brothers and sisters who...
I call them the orphans, like, in my head. Like, one of the orphans.
Yeah, like, I wonder for... Because you're looking out for them, too. You know, and part of what your advocacy is that everyone should have the chance to have a home and find stability. And so what are some barriers that you see that maybe are put in place that are preventing more people from being helped? Like how you just described, like, oh, you had to show that you were homeless for 2 years. Oh, you had to show you have mental illness. And I could imagine that
every program has its own different, like, say my cousin, she was homeless here for a couple of years. She got her apartment right before Christmas. Oh, man. And through Central City Concern. And they have a new building out in the southeast. It's really awesome. It's got solar panels and everything on it.
Cool.
The Hazelwood building.
Okay. And so for her, was it difficult for her to get housing eventually? Like, what?
Yeah, like, she had a chihuahua, and so by having the pet, she couldn't go out and work because the people in the shelter would charge her $10-$15 a day to watch her dog and then abuse it.
Oh, jeez.
Or not take very good care of it.
Okay.
Because it's not their dog, and they don't really care about it. So sure. I watched her dog for a year so she could work. She working now full time.
That's
bring
awesome.
Home the bed. She just bought a new car or a newer car. So
good for her. That's awesome. So do you have another poem you could read for us?
Yeah.
Okay.
I kinda like this one. It's a little bit darker. Kind of feeds in my I don't know. Lost. 12/14/18. As the shadows swing sideways and fall upon the ground, the street lights kindle in the quickening dusk. Globes of darkness hold fast above lamps against the last fading rays of daylight. I can hear the screeching in the front of my mind like a headache. 'Tis the sound of the night terrors. They have come home to roost, and soon they shall be given wings to take flight, no longer held in place. They come to me at night like dreams of forgotten things. To say that I'm haunted would be missing the mark. Hunted, pursued by the shades of past as they poison my mind. Having nowhere to run, I just hurry away in any direction but home. Home, such a lost concept to me. The world is my living room. Losing my door was only part of my lost past. Nothingness, nothing, nothing, nothing but the clothes on my back as I hurl into the abyss. Lost is that feeling down the back of my neck. Lost. Everything is lost. All the stuff that used to possess me, lost. I should feel free and light. Instead, I feel lost and heavy. Having nothing should not be such a burden. Some of the books I used to have tell me how less is more. Having none should be the most. Ha ha, what a joke. Change. Changed by the last few years. Good, bad, for the best, for the worst. I can't tell anymore. Like a snake shreds its skin, or the butterfly that comes out of its chrysalis, no longer the person I was.
Thank you so much. That was so powerful.
Thank you.
So I want to know more about how you started writing poetry, and I wanted to know a little bit more maybe about you as a young person. And I'm curious if as a young person you started writing, or like at what point in time did you start writing to help express some of what was going on inside?
when I got to Portland, like, I was a disaffected youth.
What does that mean?
Let's see. I have a cleft palate, and so I've always been teased my whole life.
Okay.
And then I was in Utah, which is mostly Mormon.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're Mormon, you're part of the tribe.
Mm-hmm.
And about 14 or 15, I decided I didn't want to go to church or anything anymore.
How did you come to that realization?
Just it wasn't me. Like, I didn't like going to school. I didn't like going to church. I didn't like going anywhere where people were at that point. Like, I had become more the observer of what was going on around me. Like, I was talking to a friend, and she had put her daughter in the corner. Mm-hmm. And she's like, my daughter doesn't even care. She can just make shadow puppets at the wall and be perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, that sounds like me. I could just sit there.
Keep yourself entertained.
Yeah.
So you had, maybe from an early age, you were not into being told what to do.
No.
Okay, so you wanted to do your own thing.
Yeah, and like, I didn't really have anything planned or anything going on. I just almost just wanted to be left alone.
Okay.
And then, so,
go ahead, yeah.
I don't know, I drink for a lot of years. I've been sober for over a decade.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And so, like, being on the streets is kind of harder, different for me, because I didn't have the easy release of going to a bottle or a...
You didn't have a way to numb.
Yeah.
You had to just feel your feelings.
Yeah.
And so then how did you get introduced to poetry?
Through street roots, because they started having creative writing classes, and almost right from the get-go, I was, I guess, writing about back home and being under a bridge now. Like,
so the first, do you remember the first poem that you wrote?
No, because I've written quite a few now, that, and like, I've had quite a few of them published now, so mm-hmm. it's just slowly accumulating. Like, I'm finding a voice for myself. I'm actually journaling and stuff now.
I mean, you have an amazing, I think you're an amazing writer, and you have an amazing perspective that is very true. Like, it, to me, rings very, very true, very, very real, very vulnerable. And it's amazing to me that you, as a young person, didn't have an artistic outlet.
I didn't. Like, I would just color outside the lines. Like, it didn't feel like I could be artistic. And now I'm not on top of being a textile artist. I'm a poet. I draw a little bit. Now, like, I've allowed myself, I guess, in my homelessness to mm-hmm. have a voice.
So you've given yourself permission to have a unique self-expression.
Yeah.
So for you, what role does art play in your personal journey?
Like, on some level, as an artist, everything I see is some inspiration. Like, especially in Portland, there's lots of art hidden in nooks and crannies. So I like to go and explore and see what other people have going on, and then maybe expound upon that. Because, like, with poetry or words or books mm-hmm. or art, we're all building on each other's concepts.
So for you, it sounds like art is an exploration of self-expression and communication that's iterative, meaning that it's all building, everyone's working on it together, even if you're working on it by yourself.
I have this thing of, say, a jigsaw puzzle,
mm-hmm.
and you have people around the table putting the puzzle together, and they're all kind of working on their each corner.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're all kind of working the puzzle together.
Mm-hmm. That's a beautiful image. Thank you. And so what are you admire in other artists? Whether maybe they're friends of yours in Portland, or maybe they're artists that you know about, what is something that draws you to somebody's art?
Free expression. I want to have an element of, well, in Portland, there's a lot of dark humor. Mm. So there is that.
Do you think that's because of the weather? Why do you think that's?
I don't know. I came across this really awesome one. It was like a devil, and he looked like Mr. Burns, kind of, from The Simpsons. Like he was potting stuff with his hands. And it's just I set my coffee by it, because it was like, arise, children of the coffee. And take a picture. In Portland, it's how much are you willing to take in? Are you just going to walk down the street? Because a lot of people, we have this built-in blindness to what we're going to take in. And so we're walking around blind, like, say the homeless person.
Mm-hmm.
I used to be that person,
mm-hmm.
but seeing that person that I used to be,
mm-hmm.
reiterated, or a different person, I don't want that person. I avoid that person today.
You do avoid them?
Well, not every person,
because
they are still people.
Yeah.
But there is a blindness that happens on some level.
Yeah.
Because we don't want to be disgusted by it.
Well, and it's like, I would say from my perspective, when I'm walking around, I ignore most people. Because if I had to pay attention to everybody, I would never get to where I needed to go. And so I think when I see homeless people on the street, I'm always aware that they're people, but I know that I don't, in that moment, I'm not able to provide anything to them that's going to alleviate their situation. And I also have my own thing that I have to go to.
Yeah.
To, you know, whether it's work or I'm meeting somebody or whatever. And so I think living in the city, you kind of just have to keep moving along. Otherwise, you're never going to get anywhere. Just like the homeless people
are not all,
you're
just
going to
get bogged down and burn out yourself.
Yeah. And the homeless people who live here, too, they're not interested in me. If I have something to give them, then they're interested. But then the interest is only in that interaction. And then they're not wanting to know anything about me or anything beyond that. And so I feel like it's an interesting place to live, because there are many homeless people who live here, and we do coexist in the city. I feel like we coexist, but I know there's issues, but generally that's peaceful, in at least in the places that I visit, it's a peaceful interaction.
Yeah.
Do you have that same feeling?
Well, I get tired of the really angry ones, right? The
homeless people are
just, I don't even know if they're homeless or if they're schizophrenic or what, because we used to have asylums,
mm-hmm.
and that's where we put people with mental health issues like myself or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And So we don't have those anymore. And then the jails and the prisons don't want psychological people just in there for... So we basically have the asylum on the streets.
Yeah. And the jail and the prison doesn't seem like a place that would help treat somebody with that kind of mental illness. It would maybe make it worse.
Well, maybe asylum's a bad word, but a mental... Like, say, a state hospital, but, like, a transitional...
Mm-hmm.
But, okay, having those people, and then they have to fight for their survival every day.
Yeah, definitely. It's too overwhelming.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like Portland is a place where people are continuing to move, both people with homes and people without homes.
Yeah.
And so... The city is
the housing grappling. Market's crazy.
Oh, it is crazy. Even for someone with a full-time job and a
decent salary. Two full-time jobs.
Yeah, it's still...
Or a job and a half.
Mm-hmm. It's still almost impossible to save any money. And it's one of those cities where it's just... It's very expensive to live here. The salaries are not... commensurate with what the rent is. And the rent, they just passed the rent control.
Yes.
Which is great. But I think there's a lot of conditions in Portland that make it difficult to live here.
Yeah.
If you have money or if you don't have money, it's like everyone's kind of struggling.
Everybody, because like people are $400 away. A lot of people are $400 away from losing their apartment.
Mm-hmm.
If they're sick, if they have a flat tire, if their kid's
maybe
sick.
They have a medical bill that they didn't foresee.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's so many things that just can push people over the edge into poverty, losing their home, losing their car. And so I think one thing that I'm learning from you is that everybody has the potential to be homeless.
Yeah.
And so if you see homeless people as other or less than human or less than you, you may be that person.
Yeah, because I totally was that person. I got to walk in several pairs of used shoes.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to walk in several people's shoes.
Mm-hmm.
In my mind, I'm like, I'm walking in another person's shoes right now.
And so for you, what has that given you?
A bottom-up approach.
What does that mean?
Because I was the bottom. There's not much further down you can go.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like grassroots. It's seeds.
So one building block at a time.
Yeah, like... The more people that have an honest discussion about it instead of over social media, like, it's almost made it to where we can't have a discussion about anything, but we need to have honest discussions about things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
'Cause that's how we come to understandings and being on the same page and seeing eye to eye about things, or at least seeing the other person's point of view. If we're shouting at each other from across the peanut gallery, nothing really gets changed or solved or anything.
And I think one thing I feel is true is that you can negotiate anything. So let's say somebody told you what their experience was. Everyone has the opportunity to help in some way. And they can negotiate for themselves. They can negotiate with the other person what it is they're willing to do to help. Because it's not a one-way street. It's a two-way street. So
yeah,
I may be able to help somebody in a position who has less than I do. But they are also going to help me. And I think that idea that, like, the homeless population or poor people have nothing to offer or nothing to give is so beyond wrong. It's so erroneous that people really have to recognize that the money, like money and the bottom dollar, doesn't make anybody a good person. It doesn't make them better than anyone else. And people, in my opinion, have to look beyond what is the financial worth of this person.
Yeah, like, we all have this, like, on some level, it's the outer, we look at the covers of people, like, if you, some people are novels, and some people are short stories, and some people are articles.
Some people are poems.
Yeah. And we tend to look at the cover, whatever the cover is, and until we talk to each other, we don't get a chance to read between the lines or what's in the cover.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And I feel like life is so much more rich when you can have a real conversation with people. Yeah. And realize that they have the same struggles that you have. There's no difference, really. Maybe there's some superficial differences or experiential differences, but everyone is going through struggles and joys and pain and grief.
Yes.
And so I think that's important for people to understand, that people on the street are experiencing those same joys, those same pain, the same grief that I experience or they experience in their home when they're watching TV.
Yeah.
You know, some people watch TV because they're trying to numb what's going on inside.
I haven't watched TV in the last, I don't know, 6 or 7 years.
Good for you.
Like, I kind of...
You're not missing anything.
Before I was homeless, I just, like, commercial programming is not where it's at.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just got Netflix and Amazon and Gaiam and decided to program myself, man. If it's programming, you're either getting programmed by somebody else or you're programming yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And I feel like capitalism, which I feel like we're kind of talking a little bit about capitalism, but haven't talked about it expressly.
Yeah.
Kind of feeds on people being alienated or isolated.
Exactly.
And programmed. And I feel like television can program people, whereas community is subversive. Like having a community is antithetical to corporations, to the government.
They want people in their cubicles, and then they want at home in their bigger cubicle wrapped around with a fence wrapped around it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a big cubicle with subdivided cubicles in it.
Because if you have communities of people, they do things like organize protests. Yeah.
It's like we're little hamsters doing our own little thing for the corporations.
Mm-hmm. But we think that it's what we want.
We think we have free will in exchange.
Exactly. So you were telling me earlier about a walk. Could you tell the listeners about that? Speaking of community.
Okay. Some of the ladies at Hazelnut Grove. It's a tiny house village at Greeley and Interstate. Are getting together a displaced persons march from Portland to Salem.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's going to be about the 27th of May.
Okay.
Might be a couple of days. And we're just kind of in the planning stages of it. So I might get in trouble for talking about it. So I hope not. But
do you know where people could find out more information once it gets more planned out? Is there maybe a website?
On Facebook, the Hazelnut Grove site.
Gotcha. Okay, so the Hazelnut Grove site on Facebook.
Yeah.
Okay, sweet.
And Village PDX, villagecoalition.org.
Okay.
And the cityrepairproject.org.
Okay, so people can go to any of those locations
yeah.
to find out more about it. So I think we're nearing the end of the show, but let's have one more poem from you.
All right. Let's see. Find my glasses. I don't have a name for this one yet.
Untitled.
Yeah, I wrote it on 3/13/19. Sunbeams knifing through the tall buildings as I wake. A bench, cardboard, newspaper, a doorway, a place to call my own. Once upon a time, I lived in a home. I didn't feel so all alone. Moving from line to line, isolated in a crowd, swimming upstream, starting at ground zero every day. Still dreaming of one day, waiting for the days I get to play.
Awesome. Thank you so much. So that, to me, sounds hopeful.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Do you want to do the closeout?
Oh, and I'd also like to give a shout-out to the ladies at the St. John's Center for Opportunity. They're doing really marvelous work out there. In fact, they're taking over the Good Sam's Food Bank.
Awesome. Is there anyone in particular you want to give a shout-out to?
Lindsay Jensen.
Cool. Thank you, Lindsay.
Yes.
Okay, so take it away. You can end the show.
All right. I just want to say stay blessed, stay warm, stay dry. Everyone, enjoy.
Thank you so much.